So thank you everybody for coming. We're now on tape. At Home While Abroad Part 2. So where is the Shekhinah? As I pointed out, where is the Shekhinah and why does it matter to us? What impact does it have where the Shekhinah is? Also, thank you to I think I mentioned last time in part one of the series that this question's been bugging me for a while. The overall question of at home while abroad, what should our approach be? Especially those of us that are really putting a lot into establishing a community in Chutz La'aretz, whether by teaching, whether by spreading Torah, whether by building, whether by building our homes, building our shuls, building our communities. So how does that work with the Eretz Yisrael factor? How does that work with the Mashiach factor? How does that work with... And I'm thinking, as I present this, most of these sources are obviously not from the past 50, 60 years. So that itself is a separate question. I mean, I'm kind of discussing the way this has been viewed through time, but it could be that all of this might kind of fall away, bisman hazeh, with the fact that, with the advent of not Eretz Yisrael, but the advent of Medinas Yisrael, the ability that we have to go there, etc. So it could be that some of this has to be altered accordingly. So I had always had this question, Rabbi Schachter, J.J. Schachter, I thank him for kind of crystallizing the question, giving out several sources and kind of telling us that he didn't necessarily have a mahalach yet, and telling us, you figure out a mahalach on it. So I spent the last couple of weeks, really, for this year, trying to think of what would be a proper approach how to take. And here we go. We'll see what we come up with. So when one thinks about the Shekhinah, when the Churban HaBayis happens, the Beis HaMikdash does go down, and what happens to a Kadosh Baruch Hu? We have the idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu was there present in the Beis HaMikdash. And how does Hashem allow that to happen? How does Hashem allow that to happen in the Beis HaMikdash proper? How does he allow that to himself to happen? And B, what does that do then with Hashem going forward? I mean, Bnei Yisrael is now no longer there. They're now someplace else. They're no longer in Yerushalayim. They're elsewhere. While Hashem was always in Yerushalayim. So where is Hashem after that point? So I have three approaches here through the various Torah Shebaal Peh, kind of different ways of recognizing what happened to the Shekhinah. So number one is the Eicha Rabba in the Psichos, in the introduction. There's several chapters to the Medrash on Eicha, and there's an introduction that's actually very lengthy. So there is a... So there the Medrash comments... maybe start on the second line. Vayikra Hashem l'kim tzvos b'yom hu l'vachil misved. Hashem called these days to be cried, that it should be days of crying. B'shach shebikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'hachrev es Beis HaMikdash. When Hashem wanted to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, or the time when Hashem wanted to, Amar, he said, kol zman shani b'tocho ein umus olam nogin bo. That as long as I'm there in the Beis HaMikdash, so the umus olam aren't going to be able to touch it. El ach b'shach einai mimenu, v'eshbash lo Ezakek lo ad eis kates. I said, rather, I'll kind of close my eyes to it. I'll remove myself from it and promise I'm not going to punish whoever does it for a while. So, and then come the enemies in and they destroy it. So immediately Hashem turns and comes after that. That Hashem turns back from the enemy. So at that time, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu kind of turns around, closes his eyes and turns around and leaves, so that's when the enemies had the ability to come in and destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So what is this image of Churban? What is this image of Hashem's activity or Hashem's part in the Churban? So the part of Hashem seems to be, it disappears. Hashem is no longer present, and we don't necessarily see where Hashem returns in this medrash. In the other midrashim, perhaps yes, as we'll see. But in this medrash, we don't seem to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu is present. Hashem disappears and kind of leaves the scene for a while, and without an indication necessarily of when God's coming back. Okay, that's perhaps approach number one, or image number one of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in accordance with the Churban. Image number two is a different image in Shmos, where it's discussing Hashem with the... Hashem is calling Moshe present to the... describing the burning bush. And Hashem calls Moshe and tells him that Amar Rabbi Yane, Mahatu'umim halalu, that if you have twins, im chashash echa berosho chaveru margish kein, that when one of them feels some kind of pain, so the friend feels that as well. It's interesting that he's using the image of twins. I would have thought maybe he's used the image of spouses or something of that nature. But Hashem says it's twins, that if one feels something, so the other one can feel it as well. So, Kein Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Imo Anochi Betzara. So too Hashem says, I am with you in your pain. Just as if you're crying, so I'm crying as well. So mahu imo anochi b'tzara. What does that mean? I'm with you in your pain. So kishiyesh lahem tzara inam korim elala kadosh baruch hu. That when you're in pain, you only call out to a kadosh baruch hu. B'mitzrayim atal shavasam elokim b'yam be'isak v'nei Yisrael Hashem v'cheilu rabim v'om v'chol tzarasam lotza. That when b'nei Yisrael was in the were in Mitzrayim, so they called out to Hashem, and when they were by the ocean, they called out to the Hashem. So Amar Leah Kadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe Iata Margish and Ishari Bitzar. Don't you realize that? Don't you feel that I'm also in pain? Kishem She Yisrael Shuriyim Bitzar Havi Yudemi Makom Shani Medaberimach. And you should realize that from the place that I'm speaking you from, to you from. Mitocha Kotzin Keviacha Nishuta Bitzarin. I'm calling you out from this thorny bush. Right? Ever think about that? Why does Hashem appear to Moshe from this thorny bush? Right? Well, Hashem could have appeared to Moshe in any type of way. So why does he appear this way? So this Medrash gives the answer. He wanted to give the image to Moshe of Imo Anochi Betzara, that you, Moshe, are in pain, Bnei Yisrael is in pain, and I understand that, and I can't be comfortable with Bnei Yisrael being in pain, and you should realize that. So idea number one is that a Kadosh Baruch Hu disappears. Idea number two is that Hashem demonstrates his pain, that then demonstrates that he himself is in pain. And then there's idea number three. That Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Omer bo or e, kama chavivin Yisrael lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Recognize how special HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to the Jews, shebechol makum shegalu shechina imahem, that wherever Bnei Yisrael goes, so the Shechina goes with them. Galui leMitzrayim says a pasuk to show that it goes with them. Galu leBavel says a pasuk that Hashem goes to them. Va'af kashin asidni gal Shechina imahem. And so too, when Bnei Yisrael has a galus in the future, the Shechina will be with them as well. So this is perhaps a third vision, right? The second one is kind of Hashem being on his own in pain, and the third one is that we're moving on. You know, the Beis HaMikdash is being destroyed. And we're going someplace. Jews, we're going to be, you're going to continue to be God's people. I'm going to still be your father, and you're still going to be my children. And we'll see what we do in other circumstances other than what we have right now.
You're,
yes?
You're developing the idea of what's known as Shkinto Begumus.
Yes.
And Rabbi Schneider said the paradigm to that is when Hashem appears to Yaakov, and he says, Anochi Eirei Din Chodin Tzai.
Mm-hmm.
I will descend into Egypt with you. That's the basic puzzle that deals with the concept of Shechinta goes with the
okay.
Jews and the goats.
Good. Yeah. That is, this Gemara, I think, uses that term. The Gemara here uses that term. This Gemara, maybe the next one. This Gemara, I believe, where is it? Right.
But it's
not the Shechinta de Gilusa. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shechinta de Gilusa. This is the Shechinta going and going other places and going Begalus along with Bnei Yisrael. So that is, so what does that mean? What does it mean that the Shechina goes with us? So I believe, and this is just what I, this is perhaps is a little bit of a leap that I'm making, that what that means is that we're, as I said, we're setting up shop elsewhere. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, well, let's go, and you're just as much my people elsewhere as you are over here. Right? This is not happening. Yerushalayim's not happening right now. Beis HaMikdash isn't happening right now. Let's see where we're going to go in the future. So that has ramifications, which really touches on and really is a continuation of what we discussed last week. Right? Last week our discussion was about that, you know, without Mashiach, the Ramban saying, Mashiach coming, that's not really our issue right now. It doesn't really have a practical ramification. Yeah, it'd be nice if it comes. Maybe it'd be nice if it comes. But that's not our issue. Our job is to continue living as Jews. And that's what's going on here. Hashem is saying, okay, we're someplace else, and let's see what we're going to do now as Jews. Let's see what our where our paths are going to lead us. So with this and with that in mind, and that's really the paradigm I want to use going forward, and maybe we'll go back to the other two later. So with that in mind, so another two Gemaras. One is Rebbe Havanakit Sefer Kinos of Kakari Begavia, that Rebbe was once sitting and he was reading the Sefer Kinos, probably on Tisha B'Av. Himata l'hai psuka hashlich mishamayim eretz, that he came to the pasuk of that he threw down from heaven down to the earth. Nafal min yadeha, that fell from, nafal min yadeha, the kinos fell from his hands. Amar mi igaram lebira amikta. He says, from such roofs high, from a high roof to a deep pit. Right? So he's now expressing the experience of Bnei Yisrael, that Bnei Yisrael is from very high to going to very low. So what? Why am I bringing this Gemara? So bring to the next Gemara. Meister Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. It happened with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the leader of Bnei Yisrael through Bayis Sheni, right? Guided Bnei Yisrael through Bayis Sheni. That might be next year's series, huh? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's guidance. That is, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is right. He's the one who really set up Bnei Yisrael going forward. So Yochanan ben Zakkai was going. Shayarochi v'alachamer v'hayotzi miyushalayim. And somehow the ksuvan, the website that I get the translations of the Gemara for some reason on ksuvas seem to crash. So I apologize. This isn't in English. But Shayarochi v'alachamer v'hayotzi miyushalayim. He was on a donkey. He was leaving Yerushalayim. By Tamidim Mahalchem Achus. Tamidim were with him. Ra'a Riva Achasha Haisa Malakim Sa'orim Bengali Behemtam Shalarvayim. And he saw one woman who was collecting barley seeds from manure. She, what?
Dung.
Right, from the animal dung. So it came and Shirasa Osa Nithafa Basarva Umdul Afanov. She immediately covered her hair and appeared in front of him. Amrlo Rebbe Parnasani. She said to him, Rebbe, please help me out. So Amrlo Biti Mia. He says, well, who are you? Amrlo Bat Naktimun Ben Gurion Ani. He says, well, I'm the daughter of Nakdimon ben Gurion. That was the name. So he says, Amar Allah, he says, Biti mamun shel bayis beisavicha, heichan halach, where'd all your money go? Right? I remember, I did your wedding. I know exactly how much money you have. Right? Amar Allah, Rabbi lo kedin maslin matlabi Yerushalayim melech mamun chaser, that with Yerushalayim wasting away, so who has money anymore? So let's skip a little bit. Oh, Amrlo, skip to now four lines from the bottom. Amrlo, she says back to him, Rebbe Zachor Atak Shechamas Al Ksuvas. Do you remember that you signed my Ksuvas? So Amrlo Hen L'Tamidav Zachor Ani. So he turns around his Tamidim. He says, oh yeah, I remember. Kishechasamti Al Ksuvas Shel Zuva Yisikori Ba Elif Alafim Din Rei Zavim Beis Avia Chutz Mishel Chameha. And it was 100,000 Din Rei Zahav. It was a lot of money. So Bacha Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai va'amar. So Yochanan ben Zakkai began to cry. He says, "Ashreichem Yisrael, zman she'osin ritzono shel makom, ein kol uma v'lashon shuletes behem." He says, "When you're doing well, when you're doing the ratzon of Hashem, so Hakadosh Baruch, nothing can touch them." Zman she'ein osim ritzono shel makom, when they're not doing the things of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, mosim biyat uma shvela, they get put in the hands of a lowly nation. Velo biyat uma shvela el biyat behemtam shel moshe, not just a lowly nation, but the animals of a lowly nation. So Maral asks the following question on this Gemara. Right, what did he say? He sees this woman. Right, who is this woman? This woman is a woman that he remembers from a wealthy family. He did their wedding, right? And to get Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to be Masar Kedushin at the wedding is a big deal, right? And he did their wedding, and he signs the ksuvah for how much, and then he sees the lady. Many, I don't know how many years later, without any money at all. He says, what happened to all your money? He says, oh, well, we lost it all with the korban, right? We lost everything. So he says, Ashreichem Yisrael, how wondrous is Israel? Ashreichem Yisrael, at least as far as I know, is a positive term, right? How wonderful is Israel? That when things are going well, things are going wonderfully. And when things are not going well, they're the lowest of the low. So ask the Maral, I understand the first part. Right, Ashreichem Yisrael, when things go well, things go well. But what does it mean? When things go lowly, things are like nothing could be lower than us. How is that possibly an expression of Ashreichem Yisrael? So that's the Maral on the top of page 2. But Maral explains that this is the idea that's where B'nai Yisrael is. That B'nai Yisrael is at the point that we have extreme connections with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? On the fourth line, B'chol Inyan Zem if they call Tzora Mitzar Atzma Roy La Hashlemus Kuzehu Etzem Hatsurish Hishlemus V'chshe Ein La Hashlemus Sharoy La Ki'ilu Hi Nedra Lagamri. This is an example of the fullness of the Jewish experience. That if we're not living fully with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? if we're not completely being active with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then we lose it. So then that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is gone from us. In other words, it's better for us to be getting good things and getting bad things than to be getting nothing at all. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was saying to Ashreichem Yisrael. How wondrous is Israel that even when things are not going well, we're still, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still pulling the strings. We see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still pulling the strings. Yes?
Would that mean the Shekhinah is gone?
No. No, sorry, I think he's saying specifically the Shekhinah is not gone. Okay. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing this. Right? It's not that it's gone and now it's now been left for Gairus. I think he's specifically saying, look how wondrous it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is even taking care of us now. That the Shekhinah is with us now.
Well, it's punishing.
Yeah. So it's better to be punished. I did not go there, but maybe Shabbat Shuvah time, something like that, you can do that. But yeah, how the punishments is a bracha as well. That the worst punishment is when a Kadosh Baruch Hu leaves and doesn't even bother to punish. There's Gemaras that indicate that as well. Would I?
I mean, that was a full Holocaust, but then to see that would disapply as well.
Perhaps. I'm not Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, nor am I crazy to to go there.
That's the principle that is set down.
Yes.
That there is a direct linkage.
Yes. So based
well,
on, right.
It's because you're doing what Hashem wants.
Right.
When things go wrong, it's because
right.
You're not doing
right. You don't, and you don't need the Maharal to say that. The Pesukim and Chumash say that, right? That when things, if you don't do well, im lo tishma Hashem elokecha, so then these list of 50, 60 Pesukim are now going to happen to you. So you don't necessarily need the Maharal to say it. I think the Nekuda that the Maharal is adding is that the wondrous part of it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved with that. I mean, that's not necessarily fairish in the Pesukim, but that's his addition. That's what Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was adding. Yes?
I mean, it's analogous to that when you talk about Hashem being the father and B'nai Yisrael being children, because when you're a parent, even when what's not good is when you totally ignore your child, but so when you discipline them or when you, so then that's, it's bad for the child, but ultimately it's a good thing.
Right. Right, so I think that's the message of this of this Gemara. So now with the Shechinta Begalusa, now with the idea that the Shechina is continually with us, so then I the next two are starting to get behind a little bit. So the next two, so one is an article from Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi, where he points out, there's a long article about what B'nai Yisrael is doing in the Galus, and he points out that all of the, as they went through different lands, and as they settled in different cities, so these stories began to develop, these histories began to develop about all the different places that they were. A, their connections to, they all developed histories that go back to Bayit Sheni. You know, the history no longer is, you know, we happen to fall upon you, but the city somehow has some connection in the order of things going all the way back to Bayit Sheni. This is a continuous part of our Galus. This is a continuous part of our history. I mean, rather than saying that, well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has left us, we now kind of have to twiddle our thumbs and wander around from place to place until HaKadosh Baruch Hu is nice enough to bring us back, say, no, this is part of our history. Hashem is with us now as well, and it's our responsibility to develop things. This is part of the story of the Jewish people. And they developed it. These are a list of connections of how Christians became known as Edomites and Amalek became from other groups, and all of this is a continuation of the same existence that existed during the time of Tanakh, just perhaps with different people involved. There's also a long list, and this is, you know, for every Shachter pointed this out, probably on Y'Yitzhar or someplace, this list of places, I included one of them, a bunch of recordings of place is actually being referred to as Yerushalayim. So I'll show you at the end that that was not necessarily seen as a good thing at the end. But Rabbeinu Tam quotes it. Rabbeinu Tam quotes it, not necessarily as a bad thing. He's talking about a place in the Sefer Yashar. He quotes from some place, and he says that underlying part says Gam b'nei Bari shehayu karen aleihem Bari. From Bari, a place called Bari in Italy, and about Bari they used to say Kimi Bari teitze Torah udvar Hashem me otorant, and the word of that from Torah comes out from Bari, and the word of Hashem comes from Otorant. Otorant is a different town in Italy. So you see that they imposed our lines that we have about places in Yerushalayim, and just substituted them with the reality that they were living in.
This is a Jewish community then.
This is Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, and we'll see that then it might be looked at askance by some. Rabbeinu Tam writes it, not necessarily.
Rabbeinu Tam is praising it.
And then there is a list that Rabbi Shach points out of places that got that had disasters that happened, and some problems that happened to the Jewish people. And it actually puts a comparison on that to the Churban of the Bayis. These 30 Jews that were massacred was like the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. This ship tipped over someplace and the people were misavil over it. Ki'ilu, the Churban just happened. Right, so there... Well, that's a little difficult for us to understand. Okay, like it was a tragedy and it was bad, whatever. But a couple things. One is for that city. I mean, you know, it's not like today where we kind of see ourselves as, you know, all of American Jewry as one. It's not for one city. That's it. That was the whole group. That's all pretty much anybody knew, and that's who you married, and that's who you. That's the way it was. So if a disaster happens to that community sees it as if our personal korban. But they invoked the liturgy and they invoked the imagery that came straight all the way dating back to Bayis Sheni. So now, is that good or is that bad? So we pointed out last week that it was a reality. I mean, and the Ramban writes that that doesn't really Mashiach could come or it doesn't have to come. It doesn't bother me. I have to go out and do shmiras and mitzvos. So that means we're doing it. I mean, that is the reality of the times that we're. We're going to do the best that we can in these various cities. Right? We quoted the psukim from Yirmiyahu, the letter that Yirmiyahu wrote to Bavel, that you should build cities and you should plant vineyards and you should make fields, you should marry, you should have families, etc. Right? The indication is let's do the best with what we have now. So there is a ha'ara. There is an article by Gershon Scholem, who also this was showed by Timmy Rabbi Schachter. Where he, towards an understanding of the messianic idea in Judaism, where he spells out the idea that those that are more messianists, more those that are, well, we have to be waiting for Mashiach to come, right? We can't do things in permanence. Like the person who, a friend of mine likes to always tell me about his friend, that every year he takes out his sukkah to build a sukkah, and he has no idea which poles go where. He can't figure it out. So why don't you make notes on, you know, how to make the connection? She says, no, but when I take it down at the end of the year, my hope is that next year we'll be in Yerushalayim and I don't have to worry about it anymore. So it's a chisaron in amuna for me to make notes on how to put my sukkah together. Which I always ask, well, why can't you just take your sukkah? Like, the sukkah could go to Eretz Yisrael. Right? Or as we point out in the kina, there is a kina that seems to describe, you know, that this is going to be the last year. I forget the term that the kina itself says that this is going to be the last year. So Rav Soloveitchik would point out every year that he remembers when he was a kid that they used to throw out the kinos every year. And they used to take the kinos and they used to throw it in the garbage. We used it this year. Next year we're not going to need it anymore. That's just the reality. And that was the full emunah that people had. That we're just not going to need the kinos anymore when next year comes around. So Dr. Scholem points out that there's a price to pay in that. That if one is going to spend their life saying, well, I don't really have to worry about this, so the price is that next year you're not going to know how to put your sukkah up. But besides not knowing how to put your sukkah up, you're also not going to be able to build any permanence. He calls it a life of deferment. If one looks, we'll pick up at the bottom. There is something grand about living in hope, but at the same time, there is something profoundly unreal about it. Diminishes the singular something. It diminishes the singular worth of the individual, and he can never fulfill himself because the incompleteness of his endeavors eliminate precisely what constitutes its highest value. Thus, in Judaism, the messianic idea has compelled a life lived in deferment, in which nothing can be done definitively. Nothing can be irrevocably accomplished, right? So, as we pointed out, that might be a good thing. I mean, as we got to the end of last week's year, and I put the same end of last week's year at the end of this week's year, and we'll see if we get that. And he's pointing out that we have to, living a messianist existence, so you don't accomplish anything now. And nothing is ever finished. Well, I'll take half of that. I mean, I'll take the half that we need to make sure that we accomplish. We need to make sure that we do things. We need to make sure that we build things. That's what Yirmiyahu told us to do. But the idea where he says that, and nothing is ever complete, well, I'll take that also. You're right, nothing is ever complete. As we pointed out at the end of last week, and maybe we'll get to that a little bit later. Okay? So I think this is all fitting in with that line of Shechinta de Galusa. There's all that idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us. We have a Jewish community to build now. We're not just waiting for Hashem to take us back. We're building now because Hashem is with us now. And where does Hashem exist? As we point that Gemara says, in the shuls, in the communities, in our homes, all these different things are ways of continuing to live our existence with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so that is the push in one direction. However, there is obviously a dialectic here. There's obviously a push going in the other direction. Yeah, the fear being, well, if that's the case, then well, what do we need? What are we really looking forward to? So in the Siddur of Rav Yaakov Emden, so he spells out, V'kan makom sheroi laharchiv bo hadibur il mali lo haya ella avon zebiadenu she'emis avlin al Yerushalayim karoi dai laharich galusenu. That if our only sin was that we're not being misavel, that we're not mourning properly over the loss of Yerushalayim, that's enough to extend the galus. And that is the most obvious reason why the Gulf has been so strong. And that is the single most reason for the pogroms and the persecution and all the difficult things that we've had to endure. That we're not being misavil enough of Yerushalayim. So while on one hand we've spent the first half an hour discussing how we have to be building and we have to be looking forward and we have to be dealing in the present and we have to recognize that we have a job to do here, comes Yaakov Emden and says, well, don't forget Yerushalayim. Because forgetting Yerushalayim, forgetting that future, forgetting where you really belong, so that's what that is the biggest cause for all of the problems that we have, whether Hashem's causing them or not. I mean, yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is causing it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pulling the strings. I agree with Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's doing it. But why is he pulling the strings? Because we're not being misavel over Yerushalayim properly. And as on this, I just copied this right out of the bottom of the keynotes in the article. This is the Shali Srufa Be'esh. This is the kina that discusses the Crusades, where that part is invoked. In the Crusades actually started out in France, right? The call to go to Yerushalayim in 1295, right? I think November 1295, right? That took place in France. So what did the French Jews? The French Jews got very nervous. They saw all these Christians getting together. They're all getting ready to whatever, and they all got very scared. So they send a letter to Germany, and they tell Germany, what do we do? So we need money, we need help, we're about to be slaughtered. So the German Jews like sent back to them like, don't worry, everything will be okay. Don't worry, everything should be fine. And what happened? The French Jews who were nervous were pretty much spared, and the German Jews were pretty much destroyed. And that is the description that one sees in the Kina of Shali Sufa Be'esh. Shali Sufa Be'esh is the burning,
burning
the burning of the books. The name is escaping me. The Crusades case. So on the bottom of that, so quotes from this about the idea that in Worms, the complacent Jews of Worms dismissed this invitation out of hand and said they respond, "You stay where you are in Great Jerusalem, and we'll continue to where we are in our little Jerusalem." I mean, they started calling those places Jerusalem. I mean, that same imagery, those same lines that we saw before, idea of Kimi Bari Teitzei Torah Midvar Hashem. Right? Those same imagery, that same idea was invoked in Germany, and they told them, "Oh, don't worry, we're Ke'ila, we're in Yerushalayim, we're doing what we're supposed to do, everything's being built properly." And yet the destruction came along. And on the right side is the Meshech Chachma that's quoted here at the end of this source. Meshech Chachma says that what was the problem, that he foresees a problem happening in Europe. This is a couple of years before the Holocaust takes place. He foresees a problem happening in Europe. Why? Yachashov ki Berlin hi Yerushalayim. Was they're considering Berlin to be like Yerushalayim, and that Or Sameach is always brought up. And that's a famous Meshech Chachma. It's written by the same person from the Or Sameach. That Meshech Chachma is always brought up. That they're referring to these places in Yerushalayim, and that's considered terrible. So historically, it's been done for thousands of years, right? But here it was terrible. So why? What's the difference? Well, had Rabbeinu Tam say it was fine, and Rabbeinu Tam did it, and Rabbeinu Tam was a pretty smart and a pretty righteous person, he did it, and yet we see the criticism that's coming at those for not doing it properly. So there's obviously some kind of dialectic. There's some kind of competition going on here between values. On one hand, being working to build where we are, on the other hand, recognizing that it's not Yerushalayim, it's not the real thing. So any questions on that before we continue on? So Rav Soloveitchik wrote the paper that after Vatican II came out and the Nostra Aetate document came out that the Christians want to have some sort of dialogue with the Jews. We want to begin having some discussions together. We want to start working together for the betterment of society. So Rav Soloveitchik wrote, so people turned to the Rav and said, "Okay, so what do we do with this? Should we involve ourselves in this, or should we not involve ourselves in it? How much should we involve ourselves in it, etc.?" So Rav Soloveitchik responded by writing an article commentating. There's a little bit more to the story. I'm not really sure about it, so I don't want to tell, but there was pressure on the Rav from outside of the Rabbinical Council of America to sign on to say that we're not going to do this, that we're not going to have this kind of dialogue, and it's not really part of what we do, and we don't need to talk. And the Rav responded by writing confrontation. It's not just a response to those asking how do we deal with it, it was also a response to those pressuring him that that we shouldn't be involved and it shouldn't be something that we should touch. So the article goes, and really the apex of the article is where he turns to the story of Yaakov returning to Esav. And he quotes those psukim where Yaakov turns to Esav and he sends the messengers with advice saying, "You're going to go to visit Esav, and these are the things, this is the dialogue that I want you to have with him." So he invokes first, "Ger v'toshav ani imachem," which is not Yaakov, that's Avram. When Avram goes and wants to deal with Ephraim, so he says to Ephraim, "Ger v'toshav ani imachem," I am both a ger and I am a toshav. So how is that possible? Right? That itself is a contradiction in terms. A ger means I'm a stranger. A toshav means I'm a settler. So are you a stranger or are you a settler? So he responds that at the bottom of this line, "Is not this definition absurd, since it contravenes a central principle of classical logic that no cognitive judgment may contain two mutually exclusive terms. And yet the Jew of old defied his time-honored principle and did think of himself in contradictory terms. He knew well in what areas he could extend his full cooperation to his neighbors and act as a toshav, and at what point his gesture of cooperation and goodwill should terminate, and he must disengage as if he were a ger, a stranger." So that's what Avram was telling Ephraim. He was saying, "Well, I'm both. you know, if you want to just do business and you know, if you want to, if you know, if you're going to leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. So I'm a toshav. I want to live here and I want to live as neighbors with you. But if you're going to be difficult to me, if you're going to make me sacrifice my values, then I'm going to be a ger. Then I'm ultimately a stranger. So I'm ger v'toshav. I'm kind of in with one foot and out with the other. And that is obviously a difficult balance to take. So then he turns in that next paragraph of Kiyifkashu Esav Achi v'sha'alcha le'mor. You're going to meet Esav, my brother, and you're going to ask him, saying, L'mi ata v'anateleich u'l'mi ela lefanecha. Who are you? Whose are you? And where you go? And who are these that are before thee? So my brother Esav, Jacob told his agents, will address to you these questions. Who are you? Who do you belong? And where you go? To whom is your historical destiny committed? To whom have you consecrated your future? What is your ultimate glow? Your final objective? Who is your God and what is your way of life? These two inquiries are related to your identity as members of a covenantal community. However, he continued, my brother, right? He'll ask you a third question, and who are these before thee? Meaning, Hashem, he's going to ask you, who are you? So, who are you? Well, I belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm a Jewish person. My first and foremost responsibility is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what you're going to answer, that covenantal community. However, he'll also ask you a third question. And whose are these before thee? Are you ready to contribute your talents, capabilities, and efforts towards the material and cultural welfare of the general society? It's a little bit of a stretch into the read. I mean, he's really asking, who are these kids? But he's saying, these things that you have produced, all the things that you have, the things that you have made, the things that you have created, the things that you have invented. So what is going to be with those? Are you just going to keep those for yourself? Are you going to go ahead and share those with others? So to that, the answer could be, oh, these I'm willing to share with others. The things that I've produced, the things that I've made up, so that I'm willing to share. Right, are you ready to present me with gifts, oxen, goats, camels, and bulls? Are you willing to pay taxes, develop and industrialize a country? This third inquiry is focused on temporal aspects of life. As regards to the third question, Jacob told his agents to answer in the positive. It is a present to you, even to Esav. Yes, we are determined to participate in every civic, scientific, political enterprise. We feel obligated to enrich society with our creative talents and to be as constructive and useful citizens. Yet pertaining to the first two questions, who are you? So that we're not compromising on. We're B'nai Yisrael. We're from Yisrael. We're children of Yisrael, and that there's no compromising on. I mean, what we can produce, how we can work together for the betterment of society. That's a discussion we can have. Those are the things that we can discuss. The question of who we are, though, I mean, what do we inherently believe? So those are the things that we can't, that there can't be any negotiating on. That was the big fear that Rav Soloveitchik had with these kinds of discussions. So, in fact, this is the very end of that, of the article. This is the last paragraph that he wrote in the, this is part five, but this is the last of the article. The millennial history demands from us that we meet the challenge courageously and give the same answers with which Jacob entrusted his messengers several thousand years ago. At the bottom of this page, this article appeared in the journal Tradition. You can find it online at traditiononline.org. You could the essay is available for this essay, not all traditions, but this article, this issue of Tradition is available for all of us to see. Right under it is the RCA declaration about how we're going to deal with it. I mean, what are actually going to be the rules of interacting with others. So that comes after this section, right? But what is the Rav saying? The Rav is saying that in terms of our inherent beliefs, and I think he's not really talking about what we're talking about, but I think it carries over in terms of our who we are and what we ultimately belong to, what we ultimately want. So that we ultimately want something that's not going to be here. We ultimately want something that, you know, that as much as worms could be compared to Yerushalayim, or as much as Torah comes out from Bari in Italy, or as much was produced in Spain, as much as that's the case, it's just not inherent. It's not ultimate. We're not ultimately going to do there, and that's fine. And that's the reason that those are the first two answers or questions that Yaakov responded to Esav. The third question: what we produce. So we're in Chutz La'aretz right now, right? We're in Chutz La'aretz. We are producing things, right? We produce what we produce here. And that's and this is where things get a little bit difficult, Bisman Hazet, but at least 80, 100, 200 years ago, people weren't producing things for Eretz Yisrael. They're producing things, you know, they're having productive lives, and those productive lives translate to communities, productive communities outside of Eretz Yisrael. So that's there's not much of a conflict there. I mean, the things that we do are going to be used outside of Eretz Yisrael. Today is a much bigger conflict. Today, all of a sudden, we're assuming one actually believes that we're on our way toward, you know, the settlement in Eretz Yisrael is going to be the one that's going to continue on going forward with Olmei Olamim, and that we're really looking on our way to practically, we're really thinking about practical steps to how to go there. It's now, I'm not sure how much this holds true anymore. Because how much do we really want to give here when we know that we ourselves are moving on? I mean, Eretz Yisrael, what's going on there is coming from our thing. I mean, what are we producing? So we can physically produce things for Eretz Yisrael. The Zman Hazeh, today, that's the great bracha we have. That's the great achievement that we're zocha to be able to do. So to break it up as they have for many thousands of years and say, yes, we have to bow our head and say things aren't complete, as we talked about last week, those are the two sources on the bottom. What really are we waiting for Mashiach for? Either to annul the Chilul Hashem or to as the Sifsei Chaim said, that, you know, we're going to bring a Kodesh Baruch Hu back so everybody understands exactly what's going on here. Whereas Maral says that we always have to be dreaming for something better. Yes, those have existed for thousands of years. Right, but yet the idea that we could actually do things for the building of Eretz Yisrael has not existed for thousands of years. So the things that we produced were going to be produced for the community that they were living in now. Today it becomes a little bit more complicated for that reason, because we can really be producing things for Yerushalayim, for Yisrael, for the land that we're going to make it to. So I can't say that I've really resolved my conflict. I've resolved my conflict, maybe. I think last week we kind of did setting up for Galus. That was the title of this year. Last week was, okay, Beis HaMikdash is down. How are we going to produce going forward? How are we going to produce going forward? And that was the, you know, the creation that we, not really the creation, but the establishment that Akiva did, Yochum and Zakkai did, establishing that, you know, we're no longer going to be a Beis HaMikdash centrified religion. We're now going to be an individual centrified religion. That was an important step that we had to take. So we perhaps got to the year 2-300 last week. I think this week maybe we got to the year 1800. what have we done for the last those years, when really doing anything productive for Yerushalayim or for Israel was still a dream, right? And okay, so we dream about doing that. But on the other hand, we recognize that we have things to produce, and we have things to contribute wherever we are. Today, it's more difficult to make that statement, right? To say that, well, I can't do anything for there, so I have to do, my production has to be for here. So maybe, I guess that's next week's year. Next week's year is, okay, so what do we do today? It's not as that, when B'nai's Eretz Yisrael is more available to us. Yes?
I think there's a very simple, it's about what's your objective. And not just on a personal level, but on B'nai Israel's level. Like, I think we've lost sight of our objective as a nation. And if your objective is to build the Beit HaMikdash, whatever it means, however you think you can,
yeah,
then if you think living in Chasaris, to do whatever work you need to bring about the objective of the Beit HaMikdash, then that's great, and it's achieving the objective. If you've forgotten the objective, and you're just living in Chasaris and just doing your daily life, then that's one thing, but I think as long as we keep the objective in mind as a nation, then it can kind of justify what we're doing in Israel.
Right, except there's a little bit more of a practical question now. I mean, I could think of, you know, well, what's going to build the Beis HaMikdash? Is it focusing our energies on building Eretz Yisrael so that that's going to be land and that ultimately everyone's just going to end up there anyways? Or is going to bring the Beis HaMikdash, making sure that our shuls and our schools and our communities are strong here? I think that, yes, everything is for that focus. And even with Shechina de Galusa, even with Shechina going along with us, right, that's what Yaakov Emden was saying, that as much as we're doing here, we have to be producing with that ultimate goal in mind, and we can't forget about Yerushalayim, that's for sure. But I think practically today, So what does that mean? How do we decide? You know, is should the focus of our energies be the way it's always been traditionally of, you know, let's make sure our communities, wherever we are strong, or perhaps our community is a lot larger now. Our community is no longer just Wynwood or Philadelphia or the East Coast of the United States. Now the whole world is our community, and we have to, and maybe our focus maybe should be more to the East where we are now. Okay? All right, Yeshikah. Thank you.